It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and Let's Talk Legal.
Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins, attorneys at law, the right advice at the right time. And you can call in here at 800-818-2255. Our local numbers, too, 247-7282-353-4674. Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins in the studio. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ben.
Good morning, Ben.
All right. So what are we talking about today, Cecil?
Well, last
or
couple.
Or Wes.
Yeah.
Here I am. Over there. Turn the camera.
I'll do the intro
way.
Today.
Yeah, okay.
Last couple weeks, Ben, we talked about elder law. And, of course, as we've spoken about on the program before, elder law is really broad. I mean, we can talk about asset protection. We can talk about, you know, powers of attorney. We can talk about guardianship. I mean, it's just a very broad topic.
Yeah.
But what we talked about over the past couple of weeks, in general has really been more about asset protection, Medicaid, Medicaid eligibility, those type of things.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that we were going to, get to guardianship. Cecil, did we get through the asset protection and we're ready to go to guardianship? I'm trying to recall.
Let's
just sum up a little bit about asset protection.
Sure. Well, our asset protection planning always, as we've discussed, begins with protecting the real property of the person who's attempting to qualify for Medicaid. You know, whether it be their home place or any other real property that they own, Ben.
Right.
And then, of course, taking a look at what the liquidity happens to be. Medicaid, of course, considers all other assets other than real estate, whether it's cash value in life insurance, a CD, an IRA, an annuity, whatever it happens to be, they're going to call that liquidity.
Right.
Okay?
And there's various ways that you work, especially early on, to help protect those
assets.
That's
right. And, of course, they're going to immediately look at whether or not the applicant is married.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're married, doesn't matter whether it's the first marriage or a third marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter whether or not there's a prenuptial agreement, by the way.
Right.
In some of our, what we might call geriatric lovebird situations,
yes, right.
Okay, with their prenuptial agreements.
Mm-hmm.
If you're married, then they're going to take that liquidity and they're going to divide it 50-50 between the two spouses. Now, the spouse is going to then say, oh, but that's my IRA. She doesn't have any right title and interest to that. I brought that into the marriage, or it's just exclusively in my name. Okay. Or that doesn't matter, Ben. Okay. Because from Medicaid's perspective, due to the fact that we're in a marriage, the bottom line is that that asset is available to the household and therefore is available to be used for the care of the spouse that is a member of that household.
Okay.
So they take the liquidity and they divide it by half.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then of course we begin the part, the allowable, the countable side of the half.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is now, is there, and that must be spent down. Okay, before that person would be able to qualify for Medicaid. And there are certain things that qualify as not sanctionable spend down.
Right.
For instance, you know, the purchase of a car. The improvement to your real estate in any way, handicap accessibility, the payoff of debt on the house, if there is any debt, or many times an equity line, the payment of any other kind of debt that there happens to be in the household, if any, okay? There are certain allowable expenditures. There are many expenditures that are not allowable.
Right.
One of them is gifting the money away, by the way.
Yes.
Okay. But we begin to work with the client to kind of put the square pegs in the square holes to guide them through showing them the ways in which that half can be properly allocated. And then, of course, we begin to slowly but surely work with the client to qualify their loved one for some assistance.
Right.
And that's the liquidity side of the file. The first side of the file always is going to begin with the protection of the real property.
Okay, that's a good summary then of what we do about asset protection. But then elder law encompasses so much more, Wes.
Yeah, it does. I do want to talk about guardianship, but I want to come back to one thing that Cecil was referring to when we were talking about, you know, husband and wife, you know, living and one of them having to go into the care facility and, the reference to, you know, half of those countable assets that have to be spent down. You have to really look at what the total of the countable assets is to determine exactly how much it is that we need to spend down. For example, if there's $100,000 of countable assets, then we're going to have basically $48,000 that has to be spent down because the community spouse gets to keep two.
Right.
So it is for all practical purposes half. But then if you're dealing with a situation where there's say $400,000 of countable assets, it really isn't half because you have to apply what's called the community spouse resource allowance. And I've talked about that before on the program, and what that is basically, you know, you take all the countable assets and the community spouse gets to keep one half of all assets up to a certain amount. And that certain amount is a little less than $120,000 now. So under that scenario of $400,000, you know, we'd have a much more significant spend down than just, you know, $200,000.
Right, right.
So there's a cap on how much that community spouse can keep. Try to keep that simple here on the radio program, but I know it gets a little bit complicated.
Yeah, but that's what you guys do. I mean, that's how you, not everybody specializes in this kind of law, and that's what you guys do at Harvell and Collins, is that you take each case and work through all those complexities.
Exactly. I mean, that's really baseline information and baseline knowledge about how that works. And then, you know, what we then have to apply to the spend down process is, you know, more of a wealth of knowledge with regard to how the rules work and what is allowed as a spend down, as Cecil referenced, some of those things that we can do, because, you know, the things that are allowed as a spend down are very many, and they can be, you know, complicated.
But they can work to your favor. Right.
Well, the idea is that if you're sitting down with an attorney and paying the attorney to help you, they need to work to your favor.
Right. That's right. You know? Exactly.
So, yeah. That's right. So they always work to your favor when, you know, we're helping our clients do these things, because this is not a shot in the dark type deal. This is applying the law and the facts together to get a good result for
but
the client.
Often, though, when people try to do it based on what they think they know.
Well, then when they end up in our office, we're undoing things sometimes.
That's right.
So it just depends.
All right. Well, let's say we wanted to talk about guardianship too, because that's an important part of elder law that often gets overlooked.
It is. You know, we get questions all the time about, you know, mom is getting old, dad's getting old, and, you know, maybe they're being, there may be a danger to themselves and they're not doing things that are in their best interest. And maybe we are losing control of keeping them safe.
Right.
You know, those kind of things. Sometimes a scenario sits up for a guardianship where maybe we have a sibling from out of town who says, well, I don't like the way things are going there in North Carolina. I think I'm going to come get mom or come get dad and take them back to Florida or wherever it might be. And that threat is out there of that possibly happening, and the caregiver sibling is here local, you know, on pins and needles, thinking that the other sibling is going to swing into town in at midnight and pick up mom or dad, and then, you know, you're at a gross disadvantage if guardianship is not in place. There could be many scenarios and lots of scenarios we've dealt with over the years, you know, dealing with the necessity for a guardianship. Now, go ahead.
And a lot of those scenarios happen after a spouse has died and you have one, you know, one remaining. And,
sometimes you just have two elderly people and, you know, maybe you need two guardianships or maybe they're just, you know, you need control over the one. It's just the family dynamic is so interesting because it is so different from, you know, family to family. But, you know, we have certainly become very good at identifying situations and where it's necessary to go to a guardianship.
Well, you talk about safety. I just remember when my own grandfather was living by himself, and after his wife had died, and we were always concerned that he was going to catch the kitchen on fire.
Right.
Because of some bad habits that he had.
Right, right.
So there were safety concerns.
That's right. And, you know, a lot of these concerns, Ben, can be taken care of with a good power of attorney being in place,
mm-hmm.
A proper health care power of attorney being in place. But, you know, people a lot of times get confused about, you know, how far those type documents can go. Because, you know, through a healthcare power of attorney or a durable power of attorney, a financial power of attorney, the agent, the person who's designated that attorney in fact, doesn't have the right to override the decision-making power of the principal.
Right.
You know,
right.
if there's a tie here about whether, you know, mom should move into this assisted living facility or whether she needs to go to the doctor or mm-hmm. whether, you know, she needs to do whatever. I mean, it could be one of any of many things. Then the tiebreaker is mom.
Mm-hmm.
She's the one who makes the decision while there is a, you know, a power of attorney in place. However, if a guardianship is in place, then the guardian is the one who makes those decisions.
Yeah. And now we'll talk about some of those instances where that comes up too in just a moment here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. And we'd love to hear your calls too. 800-818-2255, 247-7282, 353-4674. Welcome back. Again, with Let's Talk Legal, we're talking about guardianship issues, which, Wes, indeed can be very touchy, I mean, in families, no doubt.
Yeah, we were talking about some of the things that lead us to a potential, the necessity to file for guardianship. Mm-hmm. You know, another of the top two or three that are on the list that we deal with quite often would be, you know, in the event that we think that there's some, financial wrongdoing going on.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times that's set up where maybe there's siblings, and the one sibling has maybe moved in with the parent or moved next door to the parent and is really guarded of the situation. Won't let you
right.
talk on the phone with mom or dad without, you know, without them on the other line, or mm-hmm. won't let you come see them without them hovering around in the kitchen, you know, those kind
right,
of things.
Exactly.
And we get, you know, the
yeah.
idea that, hey, maybe there's something going on here with regard to those assets and you're taking advantage of mom or dad. And a lot of time, and I say mom and dad, it could be aunt, uncle, grandfather,
sure.
grandma. I mean, it could be,
yeah.
you know, anybody, but typically, guardianship, you know, we're dealing with elderly folks, although the statute doesn't limit it to that
right.
also.
Because a lot of people who've been in an accident or a stroke victim or something
right.
like that could be of any age.
It could be. It's right. incompetence, you know,
right.
is what that is.
It can
and
be.
And we need to remember that, you know, we contrast the use of a power of attorney with guardianship. Well, the guardianship, once that's put in place, it can't be changed without a formal court proceeding.
Mm-hmm.
A power of attorney can be revoked at any time. So, I mean, if you think you're in control one day, you could, as power of attorney, that can mm-hmm. be taken away, you know, the next day. The other, you know, scenario that we see fairly frequently that I think is interesting the way it works out is that, you know, if we do have that sibling or family member who has the potential for maybe taking the parent to another state, and
mm-hmm.
you know, you have to realize the dynamic there, because in the event that, you know, let's say the parent is in North Carolina, is here locally, is doing well, is being taken care of by, you know, maybe the daughter or the son,
right,
and everything is fine, but then you have maybe the sibling from another state who then comes to town and takes mom or dad up, you know, to wherever that other state might be.
Sure.
And won't return mm-hmm. the parent. And maybe we think that's financially motivated. In many cases, it is. If
mm-hmm.
you're going to go so far as to get the parent and take them up to, you know, whatever state it might be, a lot of times there's some financial motivation there. But think about that dynamic. If the son or daughter here in North Carolina is taking care of the parent, and really has control of the situation, making sure the medication is being administered properly, has a relationship set up with the doctor, you know, has the social network set up as much as possible for the parent. And then all of a sudden, you know, the parent is in whatever other state. That sibling, that person who really had control of the situation loses all control.
Mm-hmm.
Loses, I mean, what can you do then? You really can't do much of anything.
Right.
However,
right.
let's contrast that to, let's say that the parent is does have some dementia, Alzheimer's, does have some loss of memory, these kind of things, mm-hmm. and would potentially be incompetent in the eyes of the law, in the event a guardianship was put in place, and even if that parent were taken to another state, mm-hmm. the decision maker for that parent is then the guardian. And
right.
the jurisdiction lies where? With North Carolina.
With the guardian, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, we have been, preemptive to a certain degree in situations mm-hmm. like that to establish a guardianship where otherwise a power of attorney would have been just fine. But you see that what happens is that if the parent is taken to another state,
mm-hmm.
and maybe there's some ulterior motive by the sibling who's done this, where do you think the first thing what's the first thing that sibling is going to do? He's going to get a new power of attorney put in place.
Yeah, yeah.
But if there's a guardianship in place, then you can't do that.
Yeah.
Then the jurisdiction is going to lie with that guardian. The guardian is the decision maker. The control is with the child who is the guardian. And even if, that parent is taken to another state, control can't be easily taken away at all.
Now, do guardians, I'm pretty sure I know the answer to this question, do guardians, they may almost be always or usually family members, but do they have to be?
No.
Nope.
They do not. So, Ben, let's summarize here a bit,
mm-hmm.
'cause I think I can summarize, and it will be useful. My experience tells me that guardianships, so many times fall kind of into one of two categories.
Mm-hmm.
One category is this category that we just simply never have. We do not have either a power of attorney
mm-hmm.
or a properly drafted power of attorney.
Right.
In other words, it's not specific enough. It's so general in nature that it won't do the job.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a problem in the family, but we just don't have a power of attorney.
Okay.
Okay. And so we can't do business because we don't have a competent person to sign a power of attorney, and or we don't have a document that's specific enough.
Okay.
But we don't have any dysfunction whatsoever in the family.
Right.
That's kind of scenario A.
But mom or dad or whoever
is
slipping and they're
slipping.
Not.
Slipping. Yeah. Well, more than slipping.
Yeah,
they just simply can't sign a document.
Right.
They are not competent to mm-hmm. get a power of attorney done.
Right.
Okay.
And maybe they're also doing things like, paying the bills three times a month, the one bill.
Or maybe they will not sign a power of attorney.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm.
I've had clients who will not sign it.
Right.
Are belligerent.
Yes.
And will not sign a document.
But their safety may be at stake too.
Absolutely.
Right.
Okay. All right. So we do not have a document. That's the point.
Okay.
We do not have a power of attorney. So we must get a legal guardian to have legal authority because we do not have a legal document.
Mm-hmm.
That's scenario A. Now, this is general.
Mm-hmm.
We lawyers always
sure.
have to start with generalities.
Yeah.
All right. The second big scenario that I've seen through my experience is this scenario of many permutations, of course, but that mm-hmm. generally speaking, there is conflict in the family.
Right.
Someone is saying, well, yes, there's a power of attorney, but you've been, skimming some money off the top. I don't agree with, how you have the money invested. I don't agree with you taking mom to another state.
Right.
Okay. I don't agree with you selling the home.
Mm-hmm.
Any number of things. Okay. Not to mention the fact just, not taking care of finances.
Right.
Okay. Or breach of fiduciary duty. Okay, and all of the many ways in which those factual scenarios could evolve,
mm-hmm.
Maybe just simply neglect.
Right.
I heard about a file such as this just yesterday,
mm-hmm.
where it's being alleged by friends of a person under a power of attorney that the power of attorney, the agent, is just simply neglectful.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so neglectful. Malfeasance, at best, you know, occasionally situations like this even are even turned over, believe it or not, to the district attorney for investigation. You know, because monies have been so you know, misappropriated.
Right. Right.
To the nature of it being even criminal in nature. Okay.
All right. Those are two of the major scenarios. We'll sum up more just in a moment here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law. Remind you of the website too, harvellandcollins.com, and you can call to make your appointment with them at 252-726-9050. Hey, welcome back to the program here, and Let's Talk Legal. We just have a couple of minutes left to finish summing up.
So, Ben, in all of those second scenario situations where there has been allegations of malfeasance, allegations of neglect, allegations of the fact that things are not going swimmingly,
right? Right.
Disagreement about different aspects of caregiving, financial decision making. Those, of course, even there's a document in place, by the way.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
All right. But there's disagreement amongst the family, notwithstanding the fact that there's a document. Those, of course, many times are going to frame up in terms of there being potentially a guardianship. Okay. Because some side of the family just simply is not agreeing that the person under the power of attorney is doing according to is doing things as they think they should be done.
So so when we come next week, and perhaps we can start running through how that happens, how you what the process is of guardianship, because it's not just signing a document.
Yeah, right. And, you know, when you kind of sit back and listen to the program today, there's a lot of doom and gloom here.
Yeah, there really is.
And we try to avoid that. And we really try not to, you know, spin a file off into a guardianship unless it's necessary. But I can tell you, you know, in our experience that there are certain situations where we deal with families after the fact and they wish they had filed a guardianship before, and we try to be preemptive to avoid a bigger problem sometimes by filing those guardianship proceedings.
Yes. And again, if you want to find out more, you want to call on the folks at Harvell and Collins and make that appointment at 252-726-9050, and they know how to have that difficult discussion with you too. 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City, on web at harvellandcollins.com, 252-726-9050.